Well, friends, so we've got a very interesting guest. We keep coming up with him on Memories and Music. His name is Mr. Alan Earle. And we can tell you that his story is an interesting one, but we're going to let him tell it to you himself. And we'll start out, Mr. Earle, by asking when you retired from Inkle.
1937. Or 1947. 74.
Let's,
that blew it.
Let's get it right now. When did you retire? 1974. 1974. What month?
In April. I went on pension on April 1st.
And how much service had you had with Inkle then?
36 and a half years.
And what were you doing when you retired?
I was a bailman in the converter aisle. Number 3 bales.
Right. Well, now, Mr. Earle, now that we've got that established, let's start at the other end of the scale. Where are you from? Where were you born?
Weyburn, Saskatchewan.
And what year?
1912, 11th of October.
Well, now, your parents obviously were in Weyburn. Was your father a native of Saskatchewan?
No, he was born in Ontario in Lansdowne.
Where is Lansdowne?
Well, that's about 20 miles west of Brockville, Ontario, on the line from Ottawa to Toronto.
Well, now, how did we get him out to Weyburn? How did he get out there?
Well, I guess there was nothing in Ontario, so he thought he'd go out to the Wild West where you get fill your pockets with money.
I see. Well, how did he do? What year did he go out there?
Well, he went out in 1910.
Did he go by himself?
No, but his stepfather he went out with.
And what did they do? What did they get out there?
Well, they proved up on half sections of land and started to farm.
They both got, was it a quarter section?
Quarter section each.
That's 160 acres.
160 acres of land, yeah.
How much did 160 acres of land cost in those days? Any idea?
Well, $15 cost you $15 to prove up on it. That's what it cost you for the first year.
Well, at that price, I wouldn't mind buying 160 acres of land, eh?
Guess not.
Right. Well, now, he must have told you what it was like proving up. Now, you say proving up. Tell us what the score was. Just exactly, here's a fella, he'd be a young fella at the time, arrives out right on the prairie at Weyburn, which is in eastern Saskatchewan. What did he have to do? What was the score there?
Well, all you had to do was find a piece of land. Well, you go to somebody to find a piece of land and then write into Regina and get your papers drew up from Regina on it. And they'd send it back and you had to send in a money order for $15 and you had the land, that's all. There was to it. Then you had to build on it within a year's time to put a building on it and you had it then.
Well, that's what I'm getting at, though. I mean, where did you get your lumber? How did you get it to the site and so on?
Well, if you didn't have a team of horses, you had to rent somebody's horses to go and get it and haul it in and build it up and get maybe about 60, 70 miles trip, 3-day trip to go and get it.
And this would not be over a paved highway?
No, it was all cross country like the crow flies.
You know, when you think back on it, it's incredible, and that's not so long ago. As I say, that's in practically in your lifetime. I mean, a year before you arrived on the planet that men did that, eh?
Yeah, a year before I did.
But had your... A lot of us today, if we were told, get some lumber and build a house and barn, would know how to do it. Had he picked up these skills?
Well, I don't know whether he picked them up. He worked in Ontario, sawmill and stuff. He knew what lumber looked like. You get out there, you just got to do it, or you don't. If you don't do it, you can't. You got to live, that's all. That's the way they do it. They just go at it and do it.
How would it keep warm in the winter?
Well, they had to buy coal in the wintertime to keep warm. You get your stove, you had to buy coal. You got galt coal. Come in there, you had to haul it maybe for 60 or 70 miles. You get a wagon box, you get 3 tons of the load.
Right.
So you had a pretty good load when you haul it in. It'd last you for quite a while.
And I would think that getting a stove there would be a problem, eh?
Well, it would be, but you buy it from Eaton's catalog. Most everything come out of Eaton's catalog and Simpson's.
And then you'd have to go and pick it up.
You'd have to go and be shipped in by freight. You'd have to go and pick it up.
Where, at Weyburn, eh, or in Regina, or where?
Wherever your closest jurisdiction to you, you'd have to pick it up. Milestone was a lot of it was picked up at Milestone, Saskatchewan.
But then you'd need a wagon and horses to go and get and carry it out there, eh?
You'd have to have a wagon and horses to carry it. That's all it was carried on, was wagon and horses. In the wintertime, they used sleighs.
Now, what about breaking this land?
Well, I would break it. You'd have to get hired. Generally, there was somebody with mules and oxen and cows, and somebody maybe had one horse and had six horses on a breaking plow. It was two for a breaking plow. A great big stone all you could lift on the back end to hold it down so the whipple trees wouldn't upset the plow, and that's the way somebody would break it for you. About $5 an acre he'd charge you to break it.
All right, you young fellas, you're getting it right from the source about how it was not all that long ago out on the prairies. And your father, would he be a big, strong man or what?
Well, he was 6 foot two, weighed 150 pounds.
He'd be on the thin side then, eh?
A little on the thin side.
It strikes me, Mr. Earl, this would not be an easy life for your mother.
Well, no, but you had to cook in the winter to cook, and you had to do all your cooking. You had to make all your stuff. You had to take care of the house. You had to make vegetables and fruit and everything else. You had to put down to carry yourself through the winter. You had to raise pigs and beef cattle, kill them and put them down so they wouldn't spoil, so you could eat them in the winter, summertime, too. Because you couldn't go to a store every day. It wasn't like around the corner here in Sudbury. You go to the store and buy something. You got to go 14, 15, 16 miles and maybe 60 miles to a store. You had to buy enough to do you for about 3 months before you could go back to that store again.
These were pioneer days.
Pioneer days.
Indeed they were. Well, now, what about going to school, Mr. Earl?
Well, I started to school when I was 7 years old. I drove a horse and cutter three miles to school in the wintertime and a horse and buggy in the summertime to school.
Well, now you, as we were getting ready for the broadcast, you expressed a lot of admiration now for the teacher that you had at that school, and tell us about him and about that school that you went to.
Well, the school that I went to was Quirin, in Saskatchewan. There was about 150 children in the school, and I think I had one of the best teachers. I learned more from him than any of the rest of the teachers I ever went to. He was a strict teacher, and he told us that if there was no homework taken out of that school, he said, your mothers and fathers weren't teachers. I went to school to be a teacher and got paid for it. And he said, if I can't teach you, nobody else can. And there was anybody asked him anything, he always had time to talk to him, and he always had time to tell him what was right and what was wrong.
Now, as you said, thank you, that we had 150 students in one grade.
In
one room, right?
One room, and it was
up
grade
to
one.
Grade 11.
Grade 1 to grade 11 in the room.
Now, also, as we were preparing, you told us about that he was a successful teacher, that his pupils did all right when they tried their entrance and so on. Now, what was that?
He sent 16 children to pass their entrance. They had to go to Ogemaw, Saskatchewan to pass. Before he went, they went. He says, there's two of you not going to pass, but he says, that one hurts you, it'll do you good, because I jumped you from grade 5 to grade 8. He says, the six of you is going to pass with honors, and the rest of you are all going to pass with high marks. And if you got a teacher that can do that, tell you before you go, you got a pretty good teacher.
Sounds like a good teacher to me, sir. very good. Incidentally, friends and neighbors, we're chatting today with Mr. Alan Earl, who retired on the 1st of April, 1974, as a bailman in the converter building after 36 and a half years with Inkle. Now, tell me, Mr. Earl, have you met any pupils since?
No, I haven't. I haven't met any of the pupils I went to school with in the West. And I haven't met any of my friends, very few of my friends that I went to or chummed around with in Brockville when I was chumming around there in 18 to when I was 19 years of age, neither.
But now, getting back to Western Canada and to the part of Saskatchewan, incidentally, this is Don Dunbar country. Do you know, have you ever met Don Dunbar, the editor of the Triangle, the four, he retired recently?
Yes.
He's a fine fellow.
He's a very fine fellow. He took a picture of my family back a few years ago.
Did he? Well, this is, we'll have to, Mr. Dunbar will be listening to this with extra carefully, eh? Because Estevan was his hometown and not too far from there.
Not too far from where I was.
Right. His father and he ran the Estevan Mercury paper.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it would be in existence when you were out there or not.
No, it might have been before. I know my father and mother and two other couple went to
Vancouver?
Up to that place for a do one time. I know that. I didn't go.
To Estevan.
To Estevan for a do one time. I don't forget just what the do was, though, they went to. Now.
Right. But now, sir, your father did not stay down here in the Weyburn or Milestone area. He moved on. Now, where did he move to and why? What was that story?
Well, the dry year in Saskatchewan, I was 29, when the Lord didn't get any rain, everything dried out. And we pulled out of there and come to southern Ontario to...
Well, wait a minute, no, but, Mr. Earl, before that, you moved to another part of Saskatchewan.
Oh, yeah, well,
what was that story?
Well, before we went on to one farm, before I went to school, my father was working for two English brothers, and my mother was cook for them, and we left there, and then Dad bought a farm, and we went on that. And he left that farm in Quirin, Saskatchewan district, and he went to Amulet, Saskatchewan district, and I was down there for about 8 years before we left there.
Now, some of the old-timers, some of the old-time sport fans will recall that a pretty famous wrestler, Canadian wrestler, came from Amulet. Now, who was that?
Well, Big Earl McCready, when we were living in the Quirin district, we only lived 10 miles from him.
Earl was a big, strong boy, was he not?
He was a pretty strong lad, I'll tell you.
What did he win? Did he win the British Empire Wrestling Championship or something like that?
Yeah, he went over to England and brought the World's Champion Crown back to Canada. That's what he brought back. But he left it in the United States. He didn't keep it in Canada.
What you mean by that is he became an American citizen.
American citizen and stayed in Canada, United States. It was a world championship he brought back.
Right. Now, as I say, a famous name in wrestling back in those old days. Well, sir, after you left Amulet, Saskatchewan, you came back east to... Why did you come back east?
Well, it was the first dry year out there, and my mother's father had left her a farm down here in Ontario, so we come back down to farm that. And we farmed that... I was on it for until 37, and then I left there.
First of all, when you were there, you were pretty active. Did you not win some kind of a prize for gardening and for plowing or something? What was that?
Well, when I was on the farm in Brockville in the junior farm, I joined the junior farmers, and I won first prize for gardening, and I won second prize for plowing with a walking plow, and team of horses on a walking plow, and I won second prize for that.
Now, for some of our younger listeners, tell us about a walking plow.
Well, a walking plow, you team of horses and the plow and a colder on it and two handles, and you got to watch where it goes. If you don't, you let it go, it'll go out of sight. You got to hang on to it. Make it do what you want to do, and you got a good team of horses on it. It's not much trouble. All you got to do is just balance it along, let her go.
Well,
plow it right.
So then you left the farm down around Brockville, and you headed up Sudbury way, is that right?
Yeah, I come up here. My brother-in-law said, let's go to Sudbury. So I said, we come up, left there on Friday night, pulled into Sudbury 6 o'clock Saturday morning.
What did it cost you to make the trip?
$2.50 a return ticket. I had to take a chance to go back. If I didn't get a job, go back Monday night on the train, I could have got back for $2.50.
You wasted that dollar and a quarter, though.
Yeah.
I guess you didn't go back and ask for your money back 35 years later.
No.
Like that.
I didn't do that.
Where? Tell us about your arrival in Sudbury. We hear all kinds of stories, where you stayed, what you did, and so on when you first got here, sir.
Well, we arrived here at 6 o'clock in the morning, got a taxi, and asked him to take us to a good hotel. He said, oh, what, the Queen? Well, the guy said, I don't think that's a good hotel. I've heard little rumors about Sudbury. Well, let's take you to King Eddie. So we pulled into King Eddie. We got a room for $2.
All right, Mr. Earl, so we got you settled down in a hotel, and what happened?
Well, then we slept till noon. We went out and looked around and had something to eat. And my brother-in-law knew some people up here from Brockville, so we took us the rest of the afternoon to find them. And we went out that night to a hotel, had a few beer, wound up back in the hotel, and then we hunted a room. The next day, Sunday, we found a board in a rooming place, and we roomed in one place and boarded in another, up on Oak Street, a rooming place for...
Right. Then you went job hunting, eh?
Then Monday morning, we got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, went down to the International Nichols Hiring Office, and we got in about 10 o'clock. And then I went to work there, went back at 1 o'clock, and he said, you go to work in a smelter tonight, graveyard shift, 12 o'clock at night. So that's where I ended up. I've been there ever since.
That's how it started, eh? And you remember precisely that was... What was that? Was it January of 37, wasn't it?
That was January of 37, the 26th day of January. I went to work that night.
Now, you got some memories of your first, this wouldn't be, this wasn't easy work, but you a farm boy and you didn't have safety shoes. Or tell us about your first night on the job.
Well, first night, the ship boss looked down. He said about 20 feet from him. He said, "You go down and load nickel, number one, down the door." So I went down there and I had a pair of felt boots on. Couldn't get no safety boots. They didn't have any in the warehouse. I walked out of there to dry in my sock feet that morning.
Nonetheless, you made it through. That was the main thing, eh?
I made it through. They couldn't break my back. I was too strong a back for them.
Then you moved on to some other work in the smelter then, right?
And I went upstairs on the charge floor, and I worked up there for a year and a half, and then I come back down on the nickel loader. I broke in on the nickel loader, and I run that for six years, off and on, pretty near steady for 6 years, and then it was off and on for a year.
Now, there was an assistant superintendent there at Orford that you knew pretty well, a friend of yours from Brockville, as some people may remember. What was his name?
Well, Mr. Sammy Newt from Brockville was assistant superintendent, and he knew people that I knew down there, and we got talking pretty good one morning. He came over and talked to me, and I think the boys thought I had a little back pull somewhere, so they used to tell me all the cooks that I had to work with and everything else, so I got along pretty good in Inco.
Well, fair enough. Is Mr. Newt alive or dead now?
Mr. Newt died quite a few years ago, unfortunately.
Right. Well, now, we've got you established then in Sudbury, Mr. Earl, a young fellow who grew up on the farm out in Saskatchewan, out in Dunbar country, as we've said. Back to Brockville, got a job in Sudbury, working for Inco, the Orford building there, and it seems to me you got married around about now, right?
Oh, yeah, married and a big family of 7 children.
Whom did you marry?
I married Edith Wilson from Brockville.
Tell us, we like to ask people about the circumstances, where and how they met.
Well, we met her on a blind date. Another girl that around, well, I knew her quite a few years, and she was a farm girl, but she went into Brockville, too, to work, and she got us another lad and I to come in one Sunday, and so I met this other girl, and I went with her for a year, and I was married the next year with her.
As we say, the lightning struck, or a arrow or something.
That's what they say. I don't know. That's what they say.
Well, now, about your family, Mr. Earl, tell us, would you mind us telling us their names, where they are, and what they're doing now?
Well, my oldest girl, Carol, she's married to Peter Ramsey, and they live out at Garson. And Andy Gaskell's married to Joan, the second daughter. And Gary Hanna is married to third girl's daughter. They live in Burlington, Toronto. And Fraser married my fourth girl. And Freddie Pella married the baby, the sister daughter of the family. And I have a son married to Susan Pond. And they live here in Sudbury. And my youngest son, he's at home. He's working in Coppercliff, and there's 2 girls running after him. I don't know which one's going to get him first.
Well,
I'll put that in.
Well, what about grandchildren, Mr. Earl?
We have 13 grandchildren in the family now.
Well, now, sir, here we have you growing up in what seems completely another era. Breaking land, fresh prairie land in the West, going to a school there with 121 students or something in it in one room and 11 grades or whatever it was. It seems like 100 years ago or 200 years ago, but it wasn't. It was 50 some odd years ago,
yeah.
Or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Coming back here, going to work for Sudbury, all the things that have happened through these years. What are your hobbies now that you're retired, Mr. Earl?
Well, I've garden flowers in the summertime, and Coppercliff Curling Boys have got me in there on the bar for the wintertime, and I like curling, and I curl a little bit in the wintertime, curl with the old-timers. We go to Coniston, we go to Sudbury Curling Club once a week, and we go back to Coppercliff once a week and curl, and then I curl with the shift curl boys three mornings a week, every week, Coppercliff.
Well, this has got to keep you in good condition, then, Mr. Earl, eh? All this work and the gardening and curling?
Yeah, it keeps you in good condition. You get out there and sweep, and there's a few of these older fellas, they don't like to sweep, and I have to sweep their rocks. They just stand and look at me, because I seem to have lots of ambition yet.
Maybe we'll have one of them on the show, and they'll have another story for sure.
Well, you had one of them on this show, and thank Burn Tupplin, and last year Burn Tupplin got an eight-ender, and I was lead for him, so we...
Oh, I see.
30 years colonel, that was his first eight-ender he got, and I let through the first two rocks for him. I can get that in there.
All right, Mr. Tupplin, at least we got you another mention.
Yeah, I got him on there again, Mr. Tupplin.
Right. Well, now, Mr. Earl, what about... ever go back west to see what it was like in the old days?
Well, I've heard a lot of stories about it out there, and they say my sister went back there 4 years ago to a wedding, and they took her down one place where she was and where we went to school together, and she met one young fellow that could call her by name, and that's the only one she met, and she rapped at his door, and he says, "You're Helen Earl." He says, "I don't know who you are now, but I know you're Helen Earl." He says, she didn't know him.
I'll be darned.
He could call her by name, but she couldn't call him. He was a German, little German lad, too.
Well, you know, I think if you stay in a place, you're more likely to remember people who come back than if you go away and go back yourself, I guess.
Oh, definitely. You are. You are that, all right.
If you stay somewhere, then you recognize somebody as being a stranger, I take it, eh?
And she told me who he was, and I can't remember him. I still can't remember him because I know he was the youngest one in the family, but I still can't recognize who he is. I can't remember that child at all, that lad at all.
Picture, eh?
Can't bring a picture in my mind at all on him.
Well, now, what about other traveling? Have you traveled south or anything like that?
No, I've never been south, only just across the border and back, that's all.
Well, now, I think the reason for this, if coming back to what our little chat before the broadcast, is that you've been around a little bit and you Northern Ontario looks pretty good to you. Would that be a true statement, sir?
Well, yes. I don't think that in the jurisdiction of my traveling in Southern Ontario, I don't want to go down there and fight the flies all summer. I'd rather in the rain in the wintertime on the icy roads. I'd rather stay up here in Sudbury. I know a lot of people in Sudbury. A lot of people knows me. I've got an awful lot of friends up here. I can walk down the street here in Sudbury, and I don't think I'll walk very far before somebody will holler at me. I won't tell you what they'll call me, though. Then go down to Southern Ontario, you don't know anybody, only your relations, and that's all you know.
Good for you. Good for you, Mr. Earl. Now, I think I mentioned, if I didn't, I should have, that you look in fine condition. You haven't been sick for quite a while. Is that a true statement?
No, I haven't been sick since 1950 when I put my vertebrae out of place in my back, and they called it arthritis, and that's the last time I saw a doctor till this summer. I had to go to a doctor through the government, and he passed me A1.
Very good. Now, I don't know just how we're going to handle this, Mr. Earl, but I do know, I have heard, that if you have a hobby, and it's a hobby that you don't talk about, really, if you like helping kids. Now, as I say, helping kids that might be headed in the wrong direction or something. Can you tell us a little bit about it without naming any names or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I've had quite a few dealings with young children. They've come to me, and they wanted me to try to more or less help them because they didn't want to go to their father because they knew that he wouldn't do anything for them. Took me 2 years to straighten a young lad out. I got him straightened out. He's married now and got a lovely wife and a nice child, and he's got a wonderful job in Toronto. Another young lad that... He speaks to me every time I meet him on the street, and I don't know who he is now. I forgot his name, and I had a little trouble with him, and I got him going, too. And I like to used to build skating rinks for children when this city wasn't built up like it is now. Up on Charlotte Street, I think a lot of people know that I had a big skating rink down there. I hooked up to the city's overflow water they had. They didn't know I'd done that, though. And I flooded the rink and shoveled it off, and I think I had kids from all around that end of the town on there skating. And they all know me, but I've lost their names, forgot their names. I'm not very good at remembering people's names. That's my weakness.
Mr. Earl, that is a magnificent thing that you just told us. Friends, our guest today, we told you we had a most interesting guest, and I know you will agree, is Mr. Alan Earl. Mr. Earl retired in April the 1st, 1974, after 36 and a half years with International Nickel, and he retired as a bailman in the converter building. He was born in Weyburn, Saskatchewan, Don Dunbar country, for all you good Westerners or Dunbar fans, of who there are many, in October the 11th, 1912. Mr. Earl, I think you have a philosophy about work or something that you have held to through most of your life. What is that?
Well, I don't think that hard work will hurt anybody. You don't have to work it. You go to work, you work the easiest way you can, and you do it the best you can. And as long as you do that and learn to do everything the easy way, work will never hurt anybody. It hasn't hurt me anyway yet. I'm 62 years of age now.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right. I can still get up and do a little bit of the old-fashioned step dance yet, and there isn't a dance that I can't do, and then you get $7 and about 17 friends getting you up on the floor, and you can jive and do all the rest of it. I think you got to go a long ways for that.